Good afternoon, everybody. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to the Vox Pop for Tuesday, December 5th. I'm Alan Chartok. North Korea launched an intercontinental ballistic missile last week, a bold action after President Trump returned the reclusive regime to the U.S. state list of state sponsors of terrorism earlier in November. Here to discuss the latest regarding North Korea is an old friend of ours, Stephen Lebo of the Sage Colleges. We also want to hear from you. The number to call is 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Stephen Lebo, the editor of East and Southeast Asia, the World Today Series 2017 and 18. Be with us and ask him whatever questions you like. Hello again, and welcome back to the Vox Pop WMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Alan Chartok. North Korea fired an intercontinental ballistic missile last week that flew both higher and longer than previous such launches. At least it appears that way. It came about a week after President Trump put the reclusive regime back on the U.S. list of state sponsors of terrorism. Defense Secretary Jim Mattis said there were technical advances on display in the 53-minute flight. The missile traveled roughly 600 miles to the east when it landed in the Sea of Japan. Analysts said that it had the potential to fly more than 8,000 miles, putting all of the continental United States in range. With us today to discuss the situation on the North Korea Peninsula is Stephen Lebo of the Sage Colleges. Professor Stephen Lebo is the Sherman David Specter Professor of International History and Politics at the Sage Colleges and an associate in research at Harvard University. He specializes in the relationship between Asia and the West. Stephen is also a WAMC commentator and the author of the book, which comes out just about every year, East and Southeast Asia, the World Today Series, 2017 to 2018. Believe it or not, this is the 50th edition of the book. That's quite a feat, Stephen, quite a feat. Okay, so anyway, Stephen Lebo and your calls. All right, so Stephen, I guess we'll start as soon as the calls come in. We'll take them. It's 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. So the question is Kim Jong-un crazy enough to put a ballistic missile, on a intercontinental missile and an atomic bomb on the missile and send it anywhere?
Well, the bottom line is that we're at a particularly terrifying moment because of the pressure and the tensions that are building up. On the other hand, we're also at a moment that might be the beginning of a calming period. I mean, the simple fact of the matter is that the United States, dealing with the Soviet Union, the United States and China in the 1960s, we eventually had to accept the fact that China had the bomb. And there was a lot of talk at the time, would we intervene? There was talk with working with the Soviet Union to stop the Chinese bomb, but we accepted it. The North Koreans have arrived at what people in my field, international politics, call the moment of deterrence. They appear to have. It's not clear. We don't know if it reentered. We don't know if it'll carry nukes. But the bottom line is that at a certain point, and that's going to happen eventually, unless this blows up by accident, the United States is going to have to accept that North Korea has the ability, as the Russians do, as the Chinese do. Goodness, the French do, and they don't even like us very much.
The Israelis certainly do.
Et cetera, et cetera. And the fact of the matter is, this is one more step. It is not good, but it's part of the slow explosion, to an extent, of nuclear proliferation. We cannot do anything about it. But once we arrive at that stage, I think things will calm when we come to realize we can't do anything about it.
Well, it seems to me that the key question here has to do with basically the mental stability of both people at both ends of this relationship. We have a president of the United States who does seem to many professional mental health professionals to be off the spectrum, we have a guy at the other end who seems equally disturbed. I guess it's within the realm of possibility that this thing goes off the ropes, that somebody starts it.
Which is precisely why I said this is that a moment which could be the beginning of a calming era as we accept the reality that North Korea has nukes and we are under that threat. But also, what I began with is, it's a particularly terrifying time. It's not a terrifying time because Kim Jong-un is some kind of crazy. Kim Jong-un hasn't done anything particular other than to protect his regime, his regime, his government, his control over North Korea, and he is facing the United States, which invaded friends from their perspective from Grenada. We invaded Afghanistan, perhaps with good reason. We've invaded Iraq. North Korea wants nuclear weapons to protect themselves from the United States. This has been their ultimate goal. They've been trying to accomplish this for years. This goes back all the way to his father, Kim Jong-il. Kim Il-sung was starting this as well. There's nothing particularly unusual about what North Korea is doing. On the other hand, you're absolutely right. We have a leader in Donald Trump who a great many people have divided between focusing on his narcissistic personality and everything else we've learned for the last year or two, and his phenomenal lack of knowledge about the circumstances, and he has gutted the State Department. They haven't even appointed the people we need in place in East and Southeast Asia. So in terms of the situation, while in a broader macro way, this might be the beginning of a calming, it is very, very dangerous because on the United States side, we have a person with clearly some personality disorders, without any knowledge, and not well-staffed. So in that sense, it's the opposite of being potentially calm. We are in this moment. We could go in either direction.
So we could.
Absolutely. And let me add one more important issue. We all know that despite the accomplishment of Saturday morning with the tax bill, Mueller is getting closer and closer to Donald Trump.
Exactly.
The news of this afternoon was getting access to the secret information we know about his financial situation and the loans that he is connected to with Deutsche Bank. And we've all, or many of us, have heard of that wonderful film, Wag the Dog. No matter what we think, the bottom line is that Donald Trump, the person, and this is a very narcissistic person, could use an international crisis.
And into all of this, Stephen Lebo, comes China.
And there's no question that China would like to work as well as they can. He's actually fairly popular with the Chinese leadership and the Chinese population. But the last
thing— Who is?
Donald Trump.
Okay.
For Donald Trump. But the bottom line is that China is more concerned about stability on the Korean Peninsula. China is not going to do anything that will fundamentally undermine the North Korean regime, and their ability to put pressure on it, while it is significant, they are not going to use it because they're more afraid of a destabilized North Korean peninsula than North Korea having nukes.
We'll go to Bob in Mechanicville. Bob.
Hello, Alan and Dr. Lebo. Nice to talk to you guys. Yeah, I was just getting the same perspective here as to how do we get into this situation where we have two paranoid narcissists basically running the world. I'm 69 years old as of this year, and I said, back in the 60s, things were going to get better. But every morning I wake up and I go on my NBC News app to check out to see if we've been attacked by North Korea or vice versa. And it just is beyond me how we have not progressed. We've digressed, and we find ourselves in this position today. In this democratic constituted situation in the United States and a dictatorship supposedly over in North Korea. It's beyond me how we've arrived here, but somehow we have. And I just wonder, how do we extricate ourselves, and how do we say that it's okay for us and a few other countries to have nuclear weapons and nobody else? I'd rather not have anybody, but here's the situation.
Okay. Steve?
Well, there's nothing particularly unusual about this. Since the Eisenhower administration, we have made a major effort to limit the number of countries that have nuclear weapons, the whole nuclear nonproliferation regime. And every time we have made it harder and harder and harder, but nevertheless, various numbers of countries from England and France, Alan mentioned the Israelis, et cetera, the Indians, Pakistan, have entered the nuclear arena. That is very frightening simply because if you democratize nuclear weapons, we are more likely to have a nuclear war. But there's nothing particularly unusual about what's going on in North Korea. And, of course, we're sending the wrong signals. North Korea wants those weapons to protect themselves. This is a defensive security issue. And even if for some reason they thought perhaps they could make a deal with us, and they're not going to because those weapons are what protect them, they're watching us renege on the Iran deal. So every message that this administration is sending is telling North Korea, don't do it, and they wouldn't do it anyway.
Right. You know what? It's an interesting, it's an interesting perspective, Stephen, but there are things I really have to question you about. One is, you know, it's almost as if you're sympathetic to what Kim is doing in this, you know, because, and I'm thinking here, United States may be the enemy, but you're flying missiles over Japan. That isn't what you do when you're at war, basically, with the United States. The Japanese have a great deal to be afraid of here.
Oh, and they certainly do. And this may very well push Japan, and they're technically very close, to developing nuclear weapons. It might push South Korea. But the simple bottom line is that in the world as the North Koreans see it, and I'm not sympathetic, this is one of the most horrific regimes in modern history, and I can talk, I talk about it at length in my textbook and the stuff on North Korea, of horrendous concentration camps that have lasted far longer than anything the Nazis and Stalin did. But having said that, the North Korean regime has one very specific goal, which is to continue in domination of North Korea, and they see nuclear weapons as a deterrence, and they ask themselves, well, if Saddam Hussein had had nuclear weapons, if Gaddafi hadn't given up his movement toward weapons of mass destruction, Putin probably wouldn't have gone into the Ukraine. Everything that is going on in the world and American behavior would tell the dictatorial, vicious leaders, who are not particularly unstable, that they should develop nuclear weapons, and they've done so.
Okay, we're going to take a very short break, and Stephen Lebo of the Sage Colleges will be back to talk to you. We have Barry and Barry on the stage, two different Barrys from two different places. Take it away, Professor.
Support for WMC comes from Cindy McMahon, Hunt Real Estate ERA, selling homes throughout the Capital Region since 2003, offering pre-listing preparation, professional photography, and staging services. GetCindySold.com. Lori Donovan Designs, Lenox, for over 40 years, offering contemporary and estate jewelry and colored gemstones, specializing in custom handmade jewelry, repurposing, and repairs. LoriDonovan.com. Myron Wine and Spirits, Kingston, since 1960, a wine and spirit shop with thousands of imported and domestic wines and spirits, and staff for questions and advice. Myron Wine and Spirits on Facebook. Stavros, helping people with disabilities achieve their dreams. Offices in Amherst, Greenfield, and Springfield. Stavros.org for more information. And Interim Healthcare, for 46 years, providing home care for individuals, companions, aides, and nurses, serving the Greater Capital Region, Columbia, and Saratoga Counties and Glens Falls. InterimHealthcare.com.
Back with Professor Stephen Lebo. He's the author of East and Southeast Asia, the World Today series 2017 through 18, and it is the 50th edition. Congratulations, Stephen. Okay, we got people on the phone. Let's go to Barry in Coxsackie. Okay, Barry, you're on the phone. Go.
Thanks, Alan. It's a question, but it's a commentary, I guess.
We're having a little problem. Barry, we're having a little problem hearing you. Are you on an airplane?
No.
Wherever you are, try to get
a radio station, but it's turned down.
Okay, go ahead.
You can't hear me. I was just wondering if Trump is being led around by Putin, and Putin is probably thinking, let's get these guys in a war with Korea. So could the Korean leader be, you know, could he be using Trump, goad him into a war that maybe Russians approve of, just to economically drive us down the tubes?
Okay, over to Stephen Lebo. I'm going to let you go because the phone is so bad. Thank you. All right, go ahead.
Well, I haven't heard that idea. There's no question
me neither.
That Putin has some kind of special connection. Trump seems to like authoritarian leaders. We saw that with Xi Jinping. We saw that with Erdogan in Turkey. No, I don't think that we're doing any kind of Machiavellian thing, but there's no question. Russia borders on North Korea. Russia wants stability in the Far East as well. I don't see that as likely. And it's probably very true as well that nobody in the region wants to have North Korea develop nuclear weapons. But the fact of the matter is they have done so. And right now, the effort to stop that effort or to get them to back off is probably more dangerous than a world with one more country with nuclear weapons.
1-800-348-2551. We go to the other Barry in Scotia. Okay, Barry, you're on.
Oh, thanks for taking my call. I think there's a little bit of a silver lining from a black humor perspective here. But first, let me just point out, I could agree with Professor Lebo more. Gaddafi gave up his weapons, and we joined in defeating him and overthrowing him. Saddam Hussein was as weak as could be, and he gave up his weapons, and we attacked him. And I think we're the only country not only that has used them, but has threatened to use them against civilians. First against Russia with the massive deterrence of John Foster Dulles. And secondly, I think more recently when Nixon was trying his mad dog strategy on North Korea, he was implicitly threatening to use nuclear weapons. The silver lining is that we have been obsessed with Iran from the George Bush administration right through now, and the people in Congress keep on talking about it. And I don't think they have been a threat to us. I don't think they've mounted terrorist operations against the United States, contrary to this view. So I think maybe Putin getting involved in our election and being beloved of Trump, and now North Korea, maybe we might just get distracted from our obsession with Iran. That was my silver lining contribution.
Well, you gave it, and now we'll go back to Professor Lebo and see what he has to say.
Well, I would like to believe, and this is what the caller was suggesting, that what we're seeing is, and it really wasn't so much Nixon, it was particularly with North Korea, as Nixon was running for office in 1952, he was talking about using nuclear weapons against North Korea. And it was the mad dog theory, and he wanted people to think he was, after all, the victor of the Second World War, that he was willing to use nukes. But the bottom line is that he had no intention of using nukes. He was using it as a threat. He would never have used them. He made it very, very clear to his staff. I would like to believe that Donald Trump is as sophisticated about these issues as Eisenhower was, and it's just a bluff. But I'm afraid, like a great many people, the majority of Americans, this seems highly unlikely. No, this is a very unstable situation, even as it has a potential for a more positive resolution than we've had for a long time.
So we're talking about the potential for nuclear war here, folks. I got one guy on the phone, and I want you. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. We got a Jim in North Pownell, Vermont. Jim, thanks for joining us.
Dr. Shartok, Dr. Lebo, I would like to make a proposition, and that is that we lead the world in doing away with nuclear weapons just the way we led the world into developing nuclear weapons. If we set the example, perhaps others will be intelligent enough to follow.
Well, there was certainly was a period.
Whoa. Go ahead. How are you going to do it again? How are you going to do that?
If we begin to destroy our stockpile of nuclear weapons, perhaps others will follow suit. I don't know, you know, but if we set a good example, maybe the bad apples will follow us.
Stephen?
Well, that has been part of the goal for the last half century to, in certain circumstances, in terms of weapons controls, trying to back off. And after the collapse of the Soviet Union, there was no question there was a backing off of a number of powers. We saw the Ukrainians do it, the Soviets did it. But the bottom line is that in 2017, we have a president who announced much more officially and much more recently that until the rest of the world gets their act together on nuclear weapons, America must build up its nuclear forces.
But yeah, well, that's the stupid thing to do.
But let me offer something that hasn't come up. There's something happening that hasn't been mentioned so far. For the first time in 7 years, the highest-ranking American diplomat no longer in the American service, a Republican Bush appointee earlier, who is the highest ranking person in the United Nations, has been invited to North Korea to talk. The North Koreans are really trying to figure out what's going on. They don't know if this mad dog behavior of Trump is really the mad dog behavior or if he's really playing Eisenhower or something like that. They have been reaching out just trying to understand who this guy is and what the circumstances are. He is not like any previous Republican or Democratic president, both in his apparent stability and knowledge.
Yeah, well, if we can't figure him out, the North Koreans aren't going to figure him out.
I disagree with both of you. I think he's got this. He understands exactly what's going on here, and he is playing it for everything that it's worth. He is not a stupid man. He may be a crazy man, but I don't think he's stupid. Well, and I think they've got a tremendous... Look, these are guys who have invaded the internet, who have understood all of the subtleties of that and everything else. I don't think we can write them off as being unknowledgeable.
We're talking about Trump?
No, I'm talking about Kim Jong-un. Ill.
Oh, well, that's not the same thing as really understanding a single person, what's going on in that person's mind. He has not been on the international arena for a long time. And they have been reaching out, whether you think he's easy to understand or not. They have been actually reaching out, asking people about who this man is.
Well, that's what
international politics. Yes, international politics, geopolitics. It's tied up with national interest and history and all of those kind of things. But it's also a bunch of real individuals with different personalities.
Yeah,
and Donald Trump right now might not need a nuclear war, and none of us do, but some kind of tension on the North-South Korean border, something happening in Panmunjom will, because there always is that rally
how do you know?
Would help him.
How do you know that Donald Trump doesn't need it? I think Donald Trump does need it.
No. That's what I'm saying. That was misunderstanding.
Yeah, okay.
Donald Trump does need that effect. We see his numbers dropping dramatically.
This is a
phenomenally narcissistic person. You know, Abraham Lincoln was encouraged to start a war with England as we moved into the Civil War because it might unite the Americans. There's no question, and that's not very sophisticated. Donald Trump knows that.
Okay. Well, thank you, Jim. Now we're going to go to, let's see here. Bob in Albany. Bob in Albany, you're on.
Hi, Alan. Hi, Professor. One of the most astute international observers, in my opinion, is Nicholas Kristof, the columnist for the New York Times. And he recently returned from North Korea, scared out of his wits, according to his columns. And one of the things that scared him terribly was that the North Korean officials that he was talking with and who were escorting him around and monitoring him all seemed to believe that North Korea could not only fight a nuclear war with the United States, but win it. And I'm just wondering if that's the mentality that's being developed there, doesn't that speak volumes about how close we are to a fatal mistake with a country that thinks they could beat us in a nuclear exchange?
Well, first of all, Nicholas Kristof knows this very well indeed, that what officials tell you or people on the street tell you in a viciously authoritarian country like North Korea doesn't mean squat in terms of what they really think. Now, on the other hand, that there is the inevitability of a war, that they could survive this and perhaps win, they've been saying that for the last half century. There's nothing unusual about that rhetoric, and it is completely and totally dishonest in terms of connecting it with what anybody actually thinks in North Korea. North Korea is not the isolated country it once was. They know what's happening in the rest of the world.
Well, yeah, but let's go back to your premise. Are you telling us, and Bob especially, who has raised this question, are you telling us that you think that there is any sense that with the unevenness of what we have and what they have, that they could actually win a war?
Well, of course they couldn't win a war. No. They'd be destroyed, as would large numbers of our allies. The Chinese are starting to get nervous.
Sure.
They have been doing overflights close to the Korean Peninsula because they do not like the fact that we are engaging in even more ambitious war games with South Korea, aerial war games.
And when the president said the other day, Stephen, we've got this handled. Remember?
The president says a great many things,
think of that specific statement.
I think the president has never understood that what the president says matters far more than a anybody else speculating. I don't think the president even understands the power of his own words.
See, I don't agree with you. I think the president understands precisely who he's playing to, what he's doing, what that rhetoric means.
I think when he's speaking to his base, you're absolutely right. When he's speaking to the international community in a constant stream of contradictory statements, no, I don't think so.
Okay.
Unless, of course, it's really his lawyer putting these things out.
Bob, you got a lot of people behind you. We thank you for your good call. Now we're going to go to Mike in Glens Falls, otherwise known around here as Glen Falls. Mike, you're on.
Thank you very much. I just wanted to back up something Professor Lebo said earlier about North Korea wanting to have their regime survive. I remember during the Cuban Missile Crisis, one of the negotiating points that Kennedy and Khrushchev got involved in was that they would withdraw their nukes, we would withdraw nukes from Turkey on the condition that the U.S. not try to invade Cuba, thus enabling the Cuban regime to survive. So I think what the professor says about North Korea, I think there's some validity to his point.
Well, there's more than that. The fact of the matter is that for years, North Korea was insisting that the United States promise never to invade it. They very specifically asked for and did for a long time. I don't know if they've issued that request recently. But it's true. Absolutely true.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, Mike. 1-800-348-2551. Get in the queue. Let's go to Jack in Middletown. Okay, Jack in Middletown. You're on.
Hey there. This may be slightly off topic. I just kind of tuned in. But I was just wondering how this situation, the standoff, relates to another nuclear standoff in the region as far as India and Pakistan, something that we don't hear about as much, but that seems to have been kind of cooled off in recent years, or at least portrayed as cooled off. We don't hear about it as much. It doesn't seem like there's a threat there, but I'm sure that one still lies. And it's more of a question whether that's a threat and how tensions can kind of cool, or do we just distract ourselves from tensions at different times and focus on tensions elsewhere?
Well, the tensions between India and Pakistan go on again, off again, all the time. Bottom line was, it calmed when Pakistan, Bhutto, you'll recall, announced that they would eat grass until they created a Pakistani nuclear weapon. Both sides have nuclear weapons. And depending on what's going on, there's more tension, less tension. It's always going on with Kashmir. But at the moment, the most principal tension that's going on really is between India and China. And we're starting to see the Trump administration trying to kind of focus on some sort of Japanese-American-Indian, you know, confederation, in a sense, to stand up to China and things of that sort. So at the moment, I think the tensions are really more between Delhi and Beijing than Delhi and Islamabad.
Thanks, okay. Jack. All right. 1-800-348-2551. Kevin in Melrose. Yeah, Kevin in Melrose. All right, you're on, Kevin.
Hey, great show. I have basically a two-part question. First one is, I wonder if United States is, maybe if we're overestimating their ICBM range. They say they can hit the West, California. I'm not so sure. We're talking 6,000 miles. So my question is, what's wrong with strategic patience? I know he doesn't like Obama and Trump, and I know he says that didn't work, but to me, every day that you don't have nuclear war is a win. Trump seems like the guy to me that he will go to war in a drop of a hat, and he doesn't care if a million people get killed. So I was wondering if you knew the range, the ICBM, how far it could travel and reenter the atmosphere with a nuclear warhead.
Okay, Stephen, you answer first, and then I'll have my own answer. Go ahead.
Well, the bottom line is that they're using an old Soviet missile that was built in the Ukraine. They've modified it. It appears that they have gotten a lot closer to being able to build an ICBM that would hit the United States. Two core issues. They may not be there. We don't even know if it was capable of carrying a, you know, a weaponized nuclear weapon. We don't know if it burned up on contact. There's a lot of things that are uncertain about that. But the bottom line is they're going to get there. They're either there or they're going to get there. And when you're talking about nuclear weapons, this isn't about whether they can bomb us with nuclear weapons. This is about whether we think they can bomb us with nuclear weapons. If we come to that belief, it's not going to happen unless somebody tests it. And frankly, I think that's a less than wonderful idea. Then that is going to be a deterrence for us. And that will give them the security they want.
I hate to say it, but I agree with you. I mean, I think.
Oh, my God. After 30 years of knowing you.
Yeah. I think our assumption has to be they're there. You can't assume maybe they're there. You have to assume they're there.
And in the 60s, we said, Red China's got nuclear weapons and the PRC is there. Okay. The People's Republic of China.
We are going to take a very short break. We will be right back.
Support for WMC comes from Merriman and Fister's Marketplace, 388 Kenwood Avenue, Del Mar, New York. An independent gift shop offering local art and artisan-made ornaments, pottery, jewelry, scarves, and more. Merriman, PFISTER.com. Saratoga Jewish Community Arts, presenting Son of Saul, a film by director Laszlo Nemes, showing The Unshowable of the Holocaust, December 10th, 7 p.m. at Temple Sinai. Reception and discussion to follow. 518-584-8730, extension 2 for reservations. Waterwheel Village, Galway, New York, specializing in extra-sharp New York cheddar since 1923, offering imported and domestic specialty cheeses, nostalgic candies, and more. Waterwheelvillage.com. Vision Excel Eye Care, Lake Katrine. Exams, eye care, dry eye therapy, and now new American-made frames where eyewear is an art. VisionExcelEyeCare.com. And Coldham and Hartman Architects, serving residential and institutional clients with architecture designed for resilience and renewability, designed for the next 100 years, CandHArchitects.com.
Thanks, Zach. We get so excited about talking to each other here, we forget you're there. So there are a whole bunch of people on the phone, and we want to do right by everybody. So let's take them from the top. Barry in Coxsackie. All right, Barry in Coxsackie. Barry, you haven't been on yet today, have you? Barry? Hello, Barry? Uh-oh. I think Barry left us. All right. That means we're going to go to David in Johnstown. David in Johnstown, you're on.
I'm sorry, this may be irrelevant, just cut me short if it is.
Okay.
Who invested in North Korea's nuclear industry? Was it China? Was it Russia? Who created? They didn't have any Oppenheims. They didn't have any, you know, where do they get the money? Where do they come from?
Who created this industry? It's my memory, I might be wrong, that it was the Russians that helped them to get
Russian,
started.
Russian, okay.
Yeah, it's my memory
That's
of that.
Interesting.
And remember, the North Koreans have been playing off, now communism has collapsed in various ways, but the North Koreans were playing off Moscow and Beijing for years, back and forth.
Yeah.
And they were doing that quite effective. But if I remember, the initial issue was the nuclear stuff, and it's in the early 60s. Kim Jong-un was, Kim Il-sung was committed to building these weapons up, and they started to build them. And again, of course, this is in the period China set off a nuclear weapon in 1964.
Right.
And we went through the whole thing, just as we're talking about right now, about whether that was going to be acceptable. Time magazine had this wonderful cover of a billion or whatever, 600 million Chinese in a nuclear boat, et cetera, et cetera. We've been down this road before.
Right. Okay, thank you very much.
You are welcome, and we are moving right along. So we got Wayne, Nikki, Radhu, and David to talk to, and you know, maybe a little while, about 15 minutes, it's over. So if you want to get in now, 1-800-348-2551. We'll talk to Wayne in Rensselaer County. Wayne, you're on.
Good afternoon. I missed part of the program, so cut me off if this comment has been a duplicate. I wanted to comment that North Korea has a lot of justification to get that nuclear weapon, try to protect themselves for defensive purposes, considering the carpet bombing, essentially, we did towards the end of the Korean War, and also the war games that are constantly going on off the coast of North Korea and with our bases in that area.
Okay,
and
that's,
remember,
we're
too,
take,
that, you know, we still, the war is not over. It's an armistice. It's never been officially ended.
Okay, so that's your question. Let's get an answer. Go ahead.
Well, I mean, you're absolutely correct. The bottom line is that if you are the leader in North Korea, we have had decades of reasons for them to believe that they will be safe and safer from the United States with a rather impressive record of invading other countries. Of course, lots of good reasons, but nevertheless, they believe that nuclear weapons will be a deterrence for them in the same way that, in theory, they protected us from the Soviet Union for a half century.
Thank you to Wayne. And now let's go to David in Albany. And David in Albany is in line number 6. David, you're on.
Good day, gentlemen. Nice cheery topic here. My question is about, I don't think that that they really need to be able to have a nuclear weapon that with an ICBM that reenters the atmosphere, as we're very vulnerable to EMP destruction of this country, that they just have to explode a nuclear weapon 300 miles over somewhere near the center. They're going to take out the entire electrical grid and virtually every microchip in America, plunging us back into the 19th century with the 21st century population and infrastructure.
And there's no question that it's not just an issue of North Korea. The United States has become phenomenally vulnerable in the digital age, et cetera, et cetera. That is a very real issue. Cyber warfare, we saw it in a particular context in the election, but cyber warfare is a phenomenally dangerous issue for us. And it's not just North Korea. The Russians know that as well. The Chinese know that as well. It is absolutely imperative that we improve our ability to resist that kind of electromagnetic pulse, which would be so devastating.
Absolutely. Well, from what I understand, a study was done in about 2004 by Congress, and they estimated that if this occurred, it would put us so far back, and there would be no water pumping, no cars moving, no nothing, that within 1 year, 90% of the population would be dead.
Okay, but
so
what about the other
one of those?
Yeah, but what about the other?
And also, they have north-south orbiting, polar orbiting satellites, which potentially have a nuclear weapon there, and they can use one of those. They can deorbit one of those, and if it has a nuclear weapon, and do the same thing. And they're feverishly building submarines to launch nuclear weapons now, from what I've read recently.
But the bottom line is we do not have to simply concern ourselves with that kind of level of cyber warfare. At the same time, we are enhancing a warming atmosphere that makes the circumstance we just saw with Harvey, with Irma and Maria, just as likely to destroy the infrastructure. Those are the same kinds of things.
Well, we know of your interest in this, Stephen, and you're absolutely right.
You mean the planet Earth?
Yes.
Yeah, I think we want to preserve the planet Earth.
At the very top of
and
your
the
list.
Infrastructure.
Wait, I haven't finished.
Is there?
So we do know of it, but David's point is to catalog all of those things that the North Koreans could do.
Those are not things that the North Koreans could do. Those are things that the Chinese and the Russians and the French could do. This is a much bigger problem than North Korea.
David, I think, I don't want to put words in your mouth.
The North Koreans don't need a robust capacity to hit our cities. They just need to get one nuclear weapon up and take out all of the electrical and electronic infrastructure of the country, which cannot be repaired quickly at all.
I thought that's what you meant, David. Thank you very much. Okay. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. We go to Nikki in Catskill. Hi, Nikki. You're on. Hi, Nikki.
Hello.
Hello. You're there. We're here.
Hello, gentlemen. I just want to mention something. I am not a politician. I just want peace. Last night there was a show on the same channel about Korea, and it was mentioned there that a treaty was signed years ago. The Russian left in 1952, the Chinese a few years later, And now the Americans are still there. So maybe that's the answer.
Stephen?
Thank you.
Stephen?
Bye-bye.
Well, first of all, there is no peace. There is an armistice.
Yes,
certainly the North Korean government absolutely wants peace. They want the peace for them to continue to control and dominate, terrorize the lives of the people in North Korea. But that's really the core circumstance. There is no peace, but the nuclear effort is not about North Korea threatening the United States. It's about North Korea lessening its own sense of being threatened by the United States.
Okay.
Which is why I think we're going to be safer when we recognize, as we did with China or Russia, that we live in the world of nuclear deterrence and North Korea has become a member of that world.
You guys have a chance to get in out there. Ladies and gentlemen, this is it. And you only have a few seconds because we only have about 12 minutes, 11 minutes to go. 1-800-348-2551. Let's go to Radu in Western Massachusetts. Radu.
Hello. How are you? Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I was just listening to all the discussion or the details, and I have a quick question. Since Russia is bringing all the troops to the Korean border, then the U.S. is bringing all the troops to the South Korea border and all the nuclear weapons. Obviously, Korea is in the hot seat because if they get attacked, they'll get zapped. Okay, so whose war is this? Is this the war between the U.S. and Russia, or is the war between Russia and the U.S.? Who has the interest to do all this? And not only that, but the Koreans are using Russian technology. So obviously there is an interest to prove if the Russian technology works or doesn't work. That's it.
Well, the bottom line and the most immediate issue is the long-term, half-a-century effort on the part of the United States to limit nuclear proliferation. And some days that's called Pakistan, some days it's called Iran. For a long time, it's been called North Korea. That is the core confrontation, but the history of that effort to limit nuclear proliferation has frankly always been when someone finally made it. And this list is very, very long. We backed up and said that's unfortunate, but we're living in a world of nuclear deterrence.
Thank you, Radu. Okay, let's go to Jeff in northern New Jersey. How north, Jeff, in New Jersey are you?
Yes, thank you for taking my call. In my opinion, the only way of keeping North Korea from becoming an advanced nuclear power is a naval blockade, short of a huge war, which will take hundreds of thousands of troops going back and forth on the peninsula. A naval blockade will stop them. And how can you, one more thing, how can you accept North Korea as a nuclear power? Well, look at what he's done to his own people. It's not the same as the 1950s with China. They were not slaughtering and starving their own people at the time. Their standard of living was increased under Mao. The standard of increase of the North Korean people has decreased under Kim Jong-un. No, it's a different system,
okay.
A different situation.
Okay, you made your point. Now let's go to Stephen Lebo.
Well, I wish that were true, but the fact of the matter is that the nuclear program that the Chinese were building in the 1960s was done at the same time of the horrendous Great Leap Forward, which killed tens of millions, maybe 30 or 40 million people. The Chinese were considered very scary. They were killing massive numbers of people in a much worse famine than North Korea experienced in the 1990s. I don't remember. What was the rest of his comment?
Naval blockade.
Well, this is a geography issue. I think that would be a delightful idea if North Korea was an island. But the last time I looked, North Korea was a peninsula, and it's connected to China and Russia, both of them. And I do not think we would be likely to block or attack Russian trucks coming across that. It's only a 12-mile border, but most trucks are less narrow than 12 miles.
Okay, well, then following
we
up...
We couldn't do it.
Well, then following up on Jeff's question, we go to the United Nations, we ask them for sanctions, and everyone, the Russians, the Chinese, everybody agrees with us. Let's have sanctions. Is it baloney?
Sanctions work if you're talking about a country whose economy is part of the international community. It worked in the apartheid era against South Africa. Mm-hmm. It's worked in Iran. But if North Korea, we have got a far more isolated regime that has far more control over its own people. So it is, frankly, less vulnerable to sanctions. It's less vulnerable to sanctions.
Okay, did you want to say one more thing, Jeff? God help us if we follow you.
Well, yeah, that's, you know, this way, you have to stop North Korea. Other countries like Pakistan have been.
Okay. How are you going to,
responsible nuclear power.
How are you going to stop them?
One thing we don't want to do is go saber to saber. The North Koreans are very tough.
I'm asking you a question. Wait. You said you got to stop them.
Is a blockade. Period. That's the only way it's going to stop them.
You can't blockade them. You just heard from the professor. You got the Russians and you got the Chinese. Where's the block?
It's not
the blockade. Would take the. They're not getting. In my opinion, they are not getting their stuff from the Chinese. They are getting them from Iran. They are getting them from other countries. They are not getting their nuclear weapons right now from China. So having a naval blockade would prevent Iran from sneaking stuff in there.
Okay, thanks. Appreciate it very much. Interesting and provocative call.
Iran is not going to be sneaking anything in. China and Russia will drive trucks in because they want it stable.
Okay, let's go to Don. All right, Don in Big Indian. All right, Don, you're on.
Hello, Alan. Hey. I think we should calm down for a moment and to try to understand the angst of North Korea, we should always remember that the U.S. has already invaded North Korea once.
Steve?
Oh, well, he's right. Keep going.
Now, if you've been invaded once by someone...
I mean, I'll give you a lecture on it, but you're right.
aren't you going to be a little defensive?
Let me put that into context.
Please.
When North Korea, in June of 1950... invaded South Korea. We made the decision through the United Nations to stop that advance. Exactly. We drove them, McCarthy, drove them out of South Korea. We won the war, and then we got stupid and decided to invade North Korea. We reversed it, having already won. We went right up to the Chinese border. And, of course, it would have won if the
Chinese.
The perspective, of the previous caller was that it was an island, but it's connected to China, and sure. China entered the war. We did invade North Korea. There might have been lots of good reasons, but the bottom line is they invaded South Korea. We destroyed their army. We drove it out. We won. We should have sat on our accolades, and we got stupid and invaded and went across the 38th parallel right up to the Yalu.
Let me add that in invading North Korea, we destroyed a good part of the country, many of its people. And as I read, we ran out of targets and started destroying the dams as well.
He's right.
It's okay, true. Yes, but you're right also in that's the way that
we're
it went.
Right.
And when it went to the Chinese border, we had a couple of characters, General MacArthur, General LeMay. These were people who were intent on taking on the Chinese, and they knew it.
Yeah, and Truman said, "Thou shalt not," and fired him.
He was. Okay, Don, thank you. All right, we have time for another call here. Let's go to, we'll go to Mark in Albany. Mark in Albany, you're on.
Hello, professors both. Steve, I expected you to mention the Climate Reality Project, but my question is, assuming we had a better president of the United States, what steps could lead towards peace and detente in the Korean Peninsula?
Okay, good question. Stop right there. Steve, we only got a minute. Go ahead.
Recognize they have the weapons. Things can calm. We can't stop them. We live with it like we live with the French having the power to blow us up.
And what happens? But what happens if they keep provoking by sending up missiles closer and closer to the United States, closer to Japan?
They're not provoking. They're testing. When they arrive at the point when we know they have nuclear weapons, I think it will calm.
Well, we know they have nuclear capacity now.
We don't know what they can do. We may think they've already arrived at that point. That, in this case, is a good thing because we cannot do anything about it.
Well, we have to assume it, don't we?
It would be reasonable.
Yes, we have to assume it. And so Mark's very good question is, what should we do right this second?
Well, what Mark wanted us to do was to watch Al Gore do his 24 hours
of
climate. I was a guest on it in 2012.
Right now,
we have to recognize North Korea has nuclear weapons.
Well, I don't think it goes far enough to say.
I was looking for was something like an agreement to denuclearize the Korean Peninsula which would require very intrusive inspections, as with the Iran deal. I wouldn't expect that from Trump, but maybe from the next administration.
Let's go backwards. George Herbert Walker Bush tried that. That's why we don't have nukes in South Korea.
Anyway,
it didn't work.
We got to go. I'm sorry. We left a lot of people on the line. Peter and Reed and Casey and Becky and Vincent. We're so sorry. I want to thank Stephen Lebo for joining us today. The next time we'll do climate change. Support for the Vox Pop comes from a noble home, Shelburne Falls, Massachusetts, offering design-build services that feature passive solar and energy-efficient design, supporting the local economy using local materials. Prefabricated house kits also available. Noble-home.net. Karen Lindstrom, resiliency life coach, helping people recognize negative thinking and behaviors that interfere with personal fulfillment, providing tools to build resilience for life development, rommp.com. The Albany Pine Bush Preserve, presenting Pine Bush Perspectives, a juried photo exhibit featuring photographs of the natural environment taken by visitors, albanypinebush.org, and Amherst Copy and Design Works, offering printing and copying, sign making and design services from booklets to stationery and labels to lawn signs in downtown Amherst, Massachusetts, AmherstCopy.com. Thanks again, everybody, for joining us on the Vox Pop. Our engineer has been Zach Malloy. Your calls were answered by Susie Chekai. Our producers, Jim Lavoulis. I'm Alan Shartok. Again, Steve Lebo, thank you. Stay tuned now for a news update.